Welcome to Directly Speaking, a direct-to-consumer marketers podcast. Our podcast features marketing leaders in the direct-to-consumer and e-commerce space. We get to learn a bit about their brands and the stories behind them, compare notes on trends and challenges in the industry, learn how they approach their marketing journeys, and hopefully a little bit about them personally. I'm your host, Marcus Lancaster, head of e-com and direct-to-consumer strategy at Quad. And today we welcome to the show Ryan Dennis. Ryan is an e-commerce, growth marketing, and digital product leader with more than a decade of experience scaling global D2C and omni-channel businesses. Most recently, he served as managing director of global e-commerce at Harley-Davidson, where he didn't just grow the business for apparel and parts, he 10X'd it. At Harley-Davidson, Ryan managed online sales across 21 countries through Harley's own .com platforms and marketplaces in North America, EMEA, and APAC, and even helped the brand break into China, selling motorcycles on JD.com and Tmall. These days, Ryan's advising brands on everything from customer experience to AI strategy and how to stay ahead of the curve as e-commerce continues to evolve. Ryan, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much, Marcus. Great to be here.
I'm so glad to have you, dude. Well, Harley-Davidson is such a cool brand. I wish I could say that I was cool enough to own one, but I don't. But a cool experience. And that's really what drew me to talking to you a little bit about, because, you know, motorcycle business isn't one you originally think of as being applicable for, you know, .com and omnichannel and digital. Tell us about that experience and how you grew that business.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Harley-Davidson, an incredible 122-year-old brand that, you know, when I first kind of walked into this role, was really a hardcore B2B company with a tremendous brand. You know, so figuring out how do you transform, evolve, and push that brand and those products to new heights was an interesting challenge. You know, and also just thinking about how you push the company who's primarily rooted in motorcycles to a place where they're also pushing, you know, apparel and parts both online and offline, and how you can architect customer experiences that get consumers ultimately into a dealership, onto a motorcycle and riding, and, you know, a part of the incredible community that Harley-Davidson has. It was a fun challenge to kind of tap into, unlock, and really grow over the last 10 years.
Fascinating. One of the things that people think about .com and e-commerce is a lot of times is that's a goods transaction, but there's probably an element of your responsibilities when you were there to drive people to store and to test drive and to get to know that. How did you do that?
Yeah, absolutely. I think these days is talking about how do you create that ecosystem. You know, that was something front and center always for Harley-Davidson of how do we, you know, do more than just sell the t-shirt? How do we do more than just sell the part? How do we create more meaningful customer experiences, more meaningful lifetime value? And again, the ultimate goal is, you know, someone becoming, you know, an evangelist Harley-Davidson rider who's out there, you know, getting their buddies and their friends to ride on a Saturday and stopping at the dealership, buying products there, going online when they can't get to the dealership, buying products there, you know, was the ultimate goal. So, you know, for us, it was always more than just the transaction, which, you know, made it really interesting, but also incredibly challenging on a day-to-day basis that, you know, it wasn't just about how do I convert from, you know, that social media visitor who's going to buy that t-shirt, but it was, all right, how do I get that social media buyer to buy that t-shirt? And then how do I, you know, drop a hook that gets them into a dealership either today or tomorrow. So for us, it was about, you know, thinking about all of our campaigns. How do we align all of our marketing in a way that, you know, amplifies our voice both online and in our dealerships? You know, how do we also create promotions and incentives for customers to go into the dealerships? You know, whether it's, say, spend a certain amount online and get a bounce back coupon to go visit a dealership so that, you know, hopefully there's a stickiness to, you know, that visit and that experience. Also, you know, where customers had opted in, sharing data with our dealerships so that they could make really personalized connections and almost become, you know, a clienteling agent for, you know, their dealership location, which not a lot of retailers have tapped into. But thinking about that, and even little details down to, we've got big events coming. How do we interject that on product detail pages in a thoughtful and meaningful way? And then, follow that up with an email, and then follow that up with, potentially a package stuffer that reminds them that, there's this great opportunity to go test ride the greatest new bike that just launched at their dealership just down the road, this weekend. So those types of opportunities. And then obviously, one of the bigger challenges that we took on was, how do you create a meaningful buy online, pick up in store capability for our consumers? It's one of those things that goes hard for a lot of retailers, and it becomes infinitely more complex when you start talking about, hundreds of distributed independent dealerships who have their own, choices in terms of what products they want to stock,
inventory,
their inventory, what types of systems they want to use, and making sure you have the incentives and the motivations right for both consumers and your dealership partners to, really architect that really amazing customer experience, and then optimizing, as you go. So, really, the combination of all of those, right? Like, I'm not going to say that we always got it right. But I think that we always ended up in a really great spot after kind of testing and validating and learning more about, what was important to our consumers, what was important to our dealerships, and ultimately what was important for Harley Davidson in architecting, what I always called was the triple win. Let's find ways that we all, are happy and running forward together, and let's get more of those, as we go.
Wow. I have a few threads I'd like to pull on there.
Yeah.
The first, let's do it. Data. You talked about getting customers to provide 1P data to the dealerships and to the .com and using that to build the lifestyle brand. Can you tell me a little bit about how that works and how, I'm kind of thinking about that because it's a common question that we run into brands talking about how to get the most out of their 1P data.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think, again, this is an interesting one for Harley, because you've got dealerships that are collecting data, you've got the motor companies collecting data, and how do you kind of harmonize that and share it in a way that is meaningful and not overwhelming? I'd say that it continues to be a challenge for everybody, right? Like, there's more data than we almost know what to do with. But at the same time, I think we always kind of feel like we're behind and that we don't have enough, depending on the type of conversation. At Harley Davidson, I think it was always for us about how do we find the most meaningful data to share. At times we definitely overshared, not in a way that, we didn't want to share all the data, but it was overwhelming to a lot of folks. So a lot of the conversation here recently was around, like, how do we use, the best buzzword of the year, right? Or the last couple of years is AI. How do we use AI to really dial down and help, the agents or the people at the dealerships or even ourselves, better assess consumers in real time, given all the data that we have, to make a next best recommendation? What type of suggestion is going to help, when Marcus comes in to pick up his new seat, what types of things could somebody in that store have ready to offer him, to upsell him? Because, there's thousands of kind of different opportunities to customize a motorcycle or customize your riding style. How do you understand Marcus in a meaningful way? And then, quickly be able to kind of assess and give him some recommendations that makes it more meaningful. Or, hey, Marcus has maybe never been in a dealership. What type of offer or invite to an event is going to get him over the threshold that gets him one step closer to being, again, that guy who's out, riding his motorcycle, every day and, even in the dead of winter here in the beautiful Midwest.
A lot of what you said there is lifetime value building in terms of the engagement. Marcus has this cool seat. He might dig these saddlebags. How do you take a Harley buyer and turn him into an evangelist?
Yeah, I think, again, the ecosystem of Harley Davidson, as you get consumers engaging more, there's so many opportunities for touch points. Again, it's more than just the bike. It's more than just the part. It's more than just the t-shirt. It's about, you know, getting them engaged in all channels, helping to inspire and educate them. So we invested a lot in kind of educational and inspirational content and talking to consumers about, you know, what gets you excited to go really personalize and make your motorcycle yours. Once you get somebody who creates, you know, their masterpiece of their motorcycle, you know, they want to get out there and ride. They want to show it off. They want to go to events. And the more times you can get them to events, the more times you can get them on group rides, the more times you can get them, you know, buying in store and supplementing that with online, you know, to make their ride exactly what they want. You know, maybe they came back on a Sunday after a weekend long ride and they're saying, man, I wish I had a more comfortable seat. I'm going to go online because it's 10 o'clock at night and, you know, I'm really inspired right now. And they find that seat that ultimately, you know, should help to, you know, make them more excited and want to go ride even more because their ride is that much more comfortable and tailored for them. And then that also gives us data on how they're using that motorcycle. We know what kind of motorcycle they have. You know, they're telling us that. We know what they've bought. And how do we continue to say, all right, Marcus looks like a guy who wants comfort, or Marcus looks like a guy who wants performance, or Marcus is a guy who's really all about style, or somewhere in the middle, and serving up more products that, again, just make that ride more personalized and more meaningful to them. That, again, becomes kind of a full 360 in terms of their engagement with the brand, as well as, you know, it's such a community. So they're that much more effective in kind of bringing others into the sport and into the brand.
You just made something that is very hard sound really easy.
Yeah.
Identifying that Marcus is into comfort is one thing. Impressive. Showing Marcus products that are aligned with my likely interest, more impressive. And you successfully did that.
Yeah, I'd say we didn't necessarily get all the way. And I don't think, you know, with any of these things that you're ever done, right?
Yes.
And there's always ways to be smarter and, you know, ways to do it in a more meaningful way. You know, I think one of the big opportunities and challenges for us, you know, throughout my tenure was how do you have the right data and how do you scale it in a meaningful way that's structured, able to kind of deliver on, you know, that vision and that goal. You know, I think AI really presented a lot of promise, you know, and one of the things that, you know, we worked on right before I left was kind of partnering with one of our technology partners who was, you know, 2 years ago, bleeding edge on what we now today call agentic AI, you know, thinking about, all right, how do I take the sea of data and information that I have and start to, you know, create a conversation that can even open that up even more. And then also, you know, how do I take that same data and information and kind of AI technology and start to power a more meaningful recommendations engine?
It's really interesting that you say that, because you're leading towards what I'm seeing AI potentially have the greatest impact of doing, because you can have two 55-year-old guys and one of them plays guitar and one of them rides a Harley, you know, and they're very different people. So how do we take the behaviors of those people and utilize them to serve the next best action for them in their journey down the marketing funnel? And that's, I think, what AI is going to be able to enable us to do, don't you think?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we've talked about this for so many years. And I mean, you know, you and I both go to conferences and everybody would get up on stage and talk about how they're doing this and, you know, in a major way. And like, I think, you know, Ryan's estimation is probably that there's a few players, call it Amazon, call it some other big players out there that, you know, we're doing this at scale in a meaningful way. I think the rest of us were, you know, putting a lot of effort into it and maybe getting, you know, a little bit of payoff. But I think AI has really changed the game and, you know, really allows everyone to kind of play at the same level and do that in a much more sophisticated way. As long as your data is in a good place, I think, which is where a lot of brands that I'm talking to, you know, I think they're all very excited about AI, but they're also realizing quickly that, you know, their data is not where they need it to be. But yeah, I think, you know, we're going to see an incredible acceleration, I believe, in terms of personalization over the next few years, where, you know, if any website is static because, you know, they haven't invested in this, you know, they're going to quickly fall behind and be in trouble.
It's even easier to do in the remarketing world.
Absolutely.
Go ahead.
No, I think, you know, a lot of folks have been there, right? With Google and Facebook, you know, they're dynamic kind of evolutions in terms of how they remarket in real time, as long as you're willing to kind of give up your, you know, some of the creativity. I think those are getting more sophisticated by the second. And, you know, just even you start to see stuff out there that's kind of real time, very dynamic and very compelling creative. You know, before the early days was Google would, they'd put a little like fancy little song over top of your stuff on YouTube, maybe flip out a background. And, you know, I think those we're going to look back. I think we're already looking back and kind of laughing at the early days. But I think, you know, give another year or two and we're going to really look back and say, wow, like, you know, that was comical compared to where we are today.
Fascinating. Yeah. If you were working with a brand that was, you know, or a retailer, if you will, that has its, has a rudimentary Shopify based .com experience and are in retail, you know, a lot of those,
yep,
call it 80, 20, 90, 10 type percentage of sales. What would you do to have them migrate to being more personal? What's the next step, if you will, if I've got a typical .com Shopify site to go the next place?
Yeah, I think it's about, you know, gathering data, understanding who your consumer is, creating a relationship with them. And then I think there's a lot of different, you know, plugins that you can use. I think to better make your site more dynamic. I think the other thing, you know, to be mindful of is that personalization is, I don't know, it's happening on your site, but it's also happening a little bit off your site. I think, you know, we're seeing it. You know, people are talking about, is SEO dead? You know, I don't think and believe for a second that SEO is dead, but I think it's evolved. And I think our vision of what SEO means needs to evolve as well. I think, you know, people are almost, you know, they're going to your website, but they're also getting that personalized shopping experience via, you know, ChatGPT. So, you know, I'll give you a for instance, right? Like my mother-in-law yesterday was saying, I just had to get rid of my fire table. It was 52 inches. It was round. I went to this store and they were all super expensive. I only want to spend X. How in the world can I find one? I'm like, well, I went to ChatGPT. I need a round fire table that's, you know, this size by this size and under this budget. Give me the range of options. And it's quickly spit out. She was shocked how quickly I kind of found her. All right, here's your budget friendly one. Here's your high end one. Here's your more designed one. Here's one that you might like because of XYZ. And I think, you know, it's designing your website so that it's dynamic, but also being mindful of a lot of that personalization, I think, is going to start to move even further upstream. You know, I think Google, you could ask those types of questions to, and it didn't feel personalized. It felt very, you know, I don't know.
It isn't a ChatGPT experience. I totally understand what you're saying.
It didn't feel like it was for you, and it felt a little bit skewed based on who was paying for it. And, you know, it wasn't always as thoughtful of recommendations. So I think, you know, being mindful of that and making sure that your brand is showing up the right way in those searches. I have a brand that I was talking with last week that, you know, they thought they were X type of product. They had some really kind of early and poor reviews out in Reddit that was throwing off, you know, ChatGPT. And it was getting confused on what they are. And, you know, their strategy was a little bit more, hey, we want to avoid this. We don't want to engage in that conversation. I'm like, you need to, because, you know, it's filtering into the world of, you know, as people are searching very broadly for, you know, hey, I want this type of product with these type of dimensions that are personal to me. You know, making sure that all of that is showing up in the right way and that, you know, the AI has the right context and not getting skewed by potentially confusing or conflicting messages out in the web.
Gotcha. Well, so what does it look like? Like 2 years from now, when do we get to the point where it's all generative and personalized?
So it's interesting. I think we're going to continue to see it evolve and become, you know, very meaningful in terms of the experience. I think the other, you know, when I look across key trends that I'm seeing in you know, e-commerce and direct to consumer and retail in general, I think you're already starting to see, and it's not a new thing, but right, I feel like it's accelerating a little bit, is that like desire for authenticity and emotion. So I think you're going to continue to see like, and maybe it's upper funnel, lower funnel. I don't know where it all plays out, but I think it has to continue to evolve. There's too much power and it's too meaningful. But I also think there's an interesting kind of dynamic that is going to be, at play that really starts to pull on people's desire for authenticity and emotionally led experiences, you know, both online and offline, that I think is going to, I don't want to say disintermediate, but like, I think it's going to add a whole nother kind of facet and layer to, you know, direct to consumer and retail experiences that is certainly going to not put us in the space where it's 100% all generative, all AI, you know, the bots are just running themselves. I think it's going to be an interesting, this is my kind of, I don't know if it's prediction or if it's what it is, but I think there's going to be kind of a resurgence of, you know, people are going to ultimately, they're excited about it now. I think they're going to start to push back a little bit at some point and say, you know, I long again for those real authentic and emotional connections that make a brand more than just, you know, a bot that is flinging product at me. So I think it'll be interesting to see how that kind of tug of war plays out, right? Because I think that's where it'll get interesting.
Well, the interesting, yeah, it dovetails exactly with the conversation I had with somebody the other day that was talking about generative AI, and obviously we're already seeing it in real-time marketing often, and, you know, how will authentic content from your brand potentially resonate that much more as it becomes less common?
Yeah. Yeah, and I think that's where, again, I don't want to say this is going to sound dramatic, but like, I wonder if there's going to be a day where content from a brand potentially becomes, again, I don't want to sound too dramatic, but like, it becomes like inauthentic or just like kind of uninspired and not real, right? Where if people are going to say, well, if the brand's putting that, it's probably fake. It's not even, you know what I mean? We before had a model on a beach. Now it's not even a real model on a beach. And how can I trust that? But, you know, I wonder if the world of kind of influencers and real social media kind of experiences, you know, not that social media is the most real experience either, but I think, you know, that may start to become a more meaningful lever for brands to pull, again, in that kind of upper to mid funnel space. And then, you know, leveraging, you know, much more heavy generative AI in the lower funnel. Because I think there's just become maybe not a trust issue, but a concern that it's all fake. You know what I mean? I think there's going to be a real longing to get back to that human experience. Is my kind of bold-ish
prediction. Ultimately, authenticity wins. People respond to brands with whom they have an authentic relationship that they see themselves part of. And you can debate customer loyalty and how loyal customers really are. But at the end of the day, they respond to authenticity.
Yeah, without a doubt. I mean, that's how you create a meaningful customer experience.
All right. You want to blow your mind? I was at an event last week and I saw a clip from Minority Report, the Tom Cruise movie from 1990s. When's the last time you watched that movie?
It's been a while.
Watch it. Because he's walking through a mall and every ad is personalized. Hey, John, blah, blah, blah. I said, oh my gosh, you know, back then you thought, and that was done 30 years ago. It's insane. You should check it out.
I know. And again, I think that's just like, once it hits that level or tries to go to that level, I think people are just going to say that's too much.
It is too much. Well, I like to, you know what good looks like when you look like it. And so I'll give you an example from me last year. Sweetwater is a musical instrument manufacturer.
Sure.
And they produce a catalog. So full disclosure, Quad prints it. But I got the catalog in the mail because I'm a customer. I spent some time with it, really loved a 12-string acoustic electric from Ibanez that I liked, pulled up the website, started shopping for it, did not convert. They're remarketing to me, and they had like 12 different models of this guitar. It was so sophisticated, but just the right amount. I got it. They were serving it programmatically, both in the open internet and in the Google universe. And, you know, they're hitting me with some YouTube ads. And then every time I got one of that piece of remarketing, it was showing the very specific guitar in the color I was looking at. And they hit me with that for, you know, probably 6 to 8 additional touches. And finally, one day I'm like, you know, all right, I'm pulling the trigger. And sure enough, that guitar is sitting back there behind me right now.
I love
now.
It.
So
congratulations.
That's really well done. Personalized, marketing.
Yes.
You know what I mean? And a good example of a full funnel approach.
Yep.
All right.
Yeah, I love it.
Come back to Harley. I've got a question for you. You at one point mentioned there were more than 500 different stores selling Harleys.
Yep.
How did you make it so it was a triple win? I think that's the word you use, triple win. And you know, what were some of the things that you did to make that successful?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, again, for us, it was a little bit of, you know, obviously deeply understanding the direct consumer. So ultimately, who are you selling to? But also, you know, developing a really strong relationship with some forward-thinking dealers and thinking about them as the consumer as well. You know, how do we hear from them? How do we balance our plans off of them and take input from them on what types of things they think are most meaningful to them and most meaningful to the customer experience. And then also continue to share, you know, where things are working and the data that we're seeing, right? Because I think we all have been in a situation and seen it, and it's, you know, even harder when you're further removed from it, where, you know, what maybe seems obvious isn't always obvious in what it delivers or the outcome that it results in. So, you know, the most linear path to X may not be the most efficient way to get to why. But being able to kind of share that information and help everybody understand between, you know, the motor company and the dealer relationship, and then ultimately working together to prioritize how are we going to move this customer experience forward in a way that it is mutually beneficial for all of us was how the conversation went. And then also think about how you're going to measure success maybe a little bit differently than, you know, a traditional DTC company would, right? You may trade off revenue or this or that for an engagement with this specific topic during this specific time or, you know, transactions this way or data.
Like driving people to the dealership as a KPI?
Yeah, it was absolutely a huge KPI for us.
Were you able to measure at the individual consumer level that Marcus interacted with the .com and Marcus went to the dealership?
Yeah, we were. So we had that was one of the things that, you know, I couldn't have done this job without, was kind of a robust, you know, customer data platform that, you know, helped me to understand journeys, interactions, and if what we were doing was actually moving the needle. So yeah, absolutely had to have that. And, you know, it made a lot of conversations really easy, you know, because dealers would have ideas on things that we should test and internal folks would have ideas on things we should test. And I would have ideas on things we should test. And some of them, you know, went from small to really wild and being open to testing those went a long ways. Yeah. And ultimately, you know, for Harley Davidson, right, it's all about the motorcycle and the riding experience,
yeah,
and keeping that sport healthy and thriving. So, you know, if you're selling a t-shirt at the cost of that, you know, it's problematic.
Got it. All right. So what's next for you, man?
What's next for me? So, you know, I'm loving, you know, kind of doing a lot of these kind of conversations, talking with a lot of different brands. You know, it definitely keeps my world very interesting and engaging, you know, different challenges, whether it's, you know, big brands or small little startups, or, you know, I was just down in Chicago last week at a B2B e-commerce conference and was kind of energized and curious and excited by kind of what I saw there. That was kind of an area that, you know, for me, I'd, I didn't think a lot about B2B as much as, you know, D2C. And there's a lot of energy and excitement going on over there. So for me, you know, looking to continue to help different brands in that space, doing, you know, some consulting right now and loving that. And, you know, always open to, you know, whatever comes next in that space, whether it's, you know, with a brand, whether it's a consulting or whether it's a technology and support side, you know, as long as people want to kind of continue to evolve the customer experience, you know, take what they've got today, drive it towards best in class and keep in front of all the new kind of changes and innovations in the space, I'm in to help and I'm excited to get it done.
So what do you, what gives you inspiration? What inspires you?
You know, for me, I love this space. And, you know, I kind of got into it in a little bit of a funny way, but, you know, I really found a space that I love because it's so dynamic and it evolves so fast and so much every day, that, you know, if you're not reading about what people are talking about, if you're not, you know, following the right people on LinkedIn or testing new technologies or testing new experiences, you're quickly falling behind. And, you know, maybe I'm a little bit sick in the head, but I love the anxiety of, you know, every day the floor's moving. And if you don't keep walking or running, it's going to change, in front of you. So I think it's that day-to-day challenge and that day-to-day excitement of, all right, what's next? What's new? How do I get a piece of it? You know, what's my plan to get from here to there? And even, you know, I laugh about, you know, back when I was at Harley, you know, we'd create 5-year plans and roadmaps on how we were going to get from X to Y and the types of capabilities that we're going to deliver that kind of P&L growth. You know, and it was probably laughable every year to go back and say like, oh man, that was funny that we thought those were going to be big things and the world's changed a year later. And here's, you know, now what's new. So I think it's a space that, you know, has kind of protected itself, that it's always evolving. And I think, you know, the exciting thing about right now is my sense is it's evolving faster than ever. So, you know, there's a lot of brands out there that they don't know where to start. You know, they kind of thought they had a decent e-commerce experience or digital experience. And I think they're quickly finding themselves overwhelmed with, you know, the pace of change. And, you know, I think that's only going to continue to accelerate here for the next few years at a minimum. So that's the kind of stuff, those are the kind of challenges that make me excited to kind of get out of bed every day and really, you know, go get after it and learn more and help people out. So I'm a little bit of a nerd in that sense.
Me too. Same way. The funny thing, you talk about 5-year plans and it's almost laughable these days.
You got to do it, but it's, you know, it's a stake in the ground and it's kind of a time capsule, if you will.
And you're absolutely right. If you're not learning, you're falling behind. And that will be true through the rest of our careers.
Without a doubt.
But when you're not chasing work, how do you refresh your batteries, Ryan? What are the things you're interested in?
I love being outside. I, you know, whether it's in the winter, kind of snowboarding and skiing. In the summer, my family and I, we live on a lake, so we love being on the boat. We love canoeing, paddleboarding, or just playing, you know, at our little beach. I've got a 3-year-old and a 5-year-old. So, you know, they keep me pretty occupied. But those are all kind of things that, for the most part, they can engage in. I got my 5-year-old skiing and he loved it last winter. So that was a huge dad win for me.
That's awesome. That, and just, on, just spending time with him. They're going to kill it.
And he's fearless too. So it's a good thing and a bad thing. I was a little bit fearless and, you know, maybe still a little bit fearless, but, it'll work out well for him.
Last question, I guess, for you, work related, is if you could teach Ryan of 20 years ago, something that you know now, but didn't know then, what would it be?
Yeah, I think, you know, for me, I think I had a very simplified view of what this role looked like. You know, so if I had to like go back and just like really shake myself, it'd be like, hey man, you know, you're not here just to run a website. You're not just here to optimize what's already there. You're here to really start to push boundaries, you know, so don't be afraid to take chances, you know, test things in a bold way, and challenge assumptions. You know, I think far too often in my early days, it was, you know, it was about taking very small kind of step function and, you know, testing things that maybe were a little bit bigger, were a little bit scary and being afraid to test something that maybe didn't work. Whereas, you know, finding ways to do that in a data oriented way that you can, you know what your success criteria looks like and test it and go for it. You know, but really, you know, telling myself that those big breakthroughs come from moving fast, learning faster, and rallying people around progress, and really not, you know, obsessing on perfection, but knowing that's a bit of a journey that you have to go on. And knowing that that journey mentality is what ultimately drives success, right? I think early on is like, oh, we got this big X Games campaign. This is gonna really be a step function change. And like seeing that it was just like a blip in traffic, like, all right, well, that was fun. But you know, through incremental improvements, and taking some of those bolder ideas and opportunities and really pushing them is something that I wish I had learned a little bit sooner.
All right. If somebody wants to connect with you, Ryan, what's a good way to do it?
Yeah, just find me on LinkedIn. Ryan Dennis on LinkedIn.
All right, man. Well, I just so appreciate you joining us today. It's been really enjoying getting to know you better, Ryan, and I'm looking forward to staying connected.
Yeah, absolutely. This is a blast, Marcus. Thank you so much.
And thank you for joining us today on Directly Speaking. We hope you enjoyed the content and enjoyed the opportunity to get to know Ryan a little bit better with us. Hope to have you join us again soon. Have a great day.